Welcome to the PG Growth Planned Giving Podcast. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the PG Growth Planned Giving Podcast. I'm Ed Sluga. Today, this podcast is an excerpt from a series of podcasts we'll be presenting, which comes from the webinar series that my colleagues Ken Ramsey, Peggy Colleen, and Grant Monk and I did in the fall of 2023. The four of us put together a series which work in a linear fashion, describing how to determine the type of program you should operate, the opportunity in your marketplace, the skills that you need, and how to convert that all into doing something which we're all moving our programs toward, which is a truly gift planning program. In this particular episode, I'll be presenting how do you determine what kind of plan giving program you should operate. Not all programs are alike. Not all best practices can be utilized with every organization. Your organization is unique, and you have to figure out what makes you unique and establish the program in the appropriate way. So have a listen to this podcast episode. And then again, in the coming weeks, we'll have some additional episodes around this, and it will allow you to follow along through the stages of moving from starting a plan giving program and hopefully at some point in the future as it matures, having a gift planning program. I hope you enjoy today's episode and the episodes to come.
When you look at this, though, I want to bring up the notion of best practices here, and we'll talk a little bit more about this as we go along. This is a best practice notion. If I were to be asked, what is a best practice? This is it. But not all organizations are created equal. We all have our own factors that make us unique, and the organization's characteristics make it unique. And those characteristics will actually allow us to answer some of the questions that are posed when we think about that gear of plan giving, when we're thinking about all those areas and what we're trying to accomplish with all of those areas for our program, or what commitment we have from the organization. So each organization has a combination of characteristics that make it unique and that make its program unique. So we can think of best practices, and there are some that we can bring about, but we need to know what our best practices are. And again, we'll talk about that in a second. So there are many different factors that are there that indicate the kind of program your organization should consider. And when we're considering that, what we have to know is the structure and approach and development, and those best practices need to be connected with your organization. And ultimately, those best practices will determine outcomes. What we can't do, and what we do see regularly, is people borrowing other organizations' quote-unquote best practices. And this happens in our business on an ongoing basis. We know this to occur, in fact. We know that organizations admire other organizations, or professionals admire other organizations, or professionals within other organizations. And so when we think we're going to build our program, what we're going to do is call those organizations we admire, or mimic those organizations, or have a mentorship session with one of those individuals. And sometimes they may provide knowledge and thoughts around this notion of specifics to your organization versus other organizations and the uniqueness of your organization. But oftentimes what they talk about is best practice. So we need to understand and take that best practice and mold it into our unique circumstance. But what we always want to do is, and this is a standard approach, is to move to a truly proactive program. And we'll talk about what a proactive program means in a moment. Some of you know what that means, But for us to establish a program for our unique organization, we need to know, and this seems like an existential question, but we need to know who we are. Who are you as an organization? Because that will allow us to actually establish the right program for that particular organization, which could look like others, but may not look like everyone else's program. But the notion of proactive is important as we go forward. So just need to make a little change there. Sorry, something changed on my screen. So what's the right program for your organization? That's what we're going to talk about now in the next few slides, is what steps do we need to take to find that program? And you can do this in taking the time to do a self-assessment. Take time to evaluate where you are starting as an organization, using that gear to go back to a fundamental. Do we currently have demonstrated and agreed to commitment from the organization? I'll tell you something that we hear a lot. What we hear a lot of is our ED, our CEO, our board is really, really excited about plan giving and wants it to be a focus of what we do, and they're tremendously enthusiastic about implementing that. We just don't have a budget and we can't do it this year. So I think that's somewhat tongue in cheek, but that's almost verbatim what we hear from organizations. For us, leadership commitment is a demonstration by providing that budget, and wanting to see a plan and wanting to see how this program will move. Okay, so stated commitment versus demonstrated commitment are very, very different. So we need to take the time to evaluate where we're starting. Do we have demonstrated commitment? Do we have a budget? Are there marketing materials going on currently? Those questions that emanate from that gear of plan giving are absolutely fundamental to us determining where our program is. But there are some other things that we need to understand. And we'll talk about what that means. But ultimately, where we're heading is always, again, to elevate our program or to enhance our program so that it is this proactive approach. And why we're doing that is because we believe that any program needs to be relevant to the organization, to the charity. If it's not relevant, and it doesn't have that commitment, doesn't have that plan that integrates it into the other activity, then we'll always not be truly committed to activity of raising funds. So there is, at the moment, more and more organizations that have plan giving as someone's additional activity, and the term doing this off the side of my desk or on the little corner of my desk continues to happen. For us, that's not a real demonstration of relevance, but that doesn't mean it can't be successful. And there are circumstances where it is successful, but a program of this kind needs to be relevant so that it can achieve some of the things we believe it ought to achieve. Because this, in essence, can be a transformational program. It can actually be a program that not only it brings about, as some organizations think, happy accidents, it can actually be a fundamental way that you can move forward and be successful in the activity in a very business-like way. What do we mean by that? So there can indeed be predictive yearly realized gifts and the revenue that goes along with it. So that's exceptionally important for us, that for us to be a truly transformational program, it needs to be forecastable, predictable. We need to be able to commit to, within a zone of plus or minus, revenue that will be coming in next year and placing it right into our budget. So that's a truly transformational program. And most programs that are actually achieving that are actually providing significant revenue for the organization, up to 25%, in some cases more, but a significant amount of revenue. And how that's happening for it truly to be a transformational program, there has to be targeted approaches, achievable approaches, and with KPIs, reportable measures. And ultimately, that's something that we can help as fundraisers and leaders of the program. We can help to determine, but there are ones that we want to determine and want to use as a way of reporting the program itself, because in that way, we're showing our the approach to engaging with an organization's opportunity and delivering on that, related to the commitment that we've seen in the program structure and the plan. We want those KPIs. They drive us forward. We can measure our success. There's something that we can work toward, but it's very, very reportable. The final thing that's really important is to make this a social norm within your organization. Every organization should see this as a social norm. That's not the case. We've worked with organizations. I had a moment, just as an aside, a short story, a moment when working with the CEO of a very large, well-known charity, trying to implement and to expand their planned giving program, talking to that the CEO of that charity and mentioning, you know, the case for support around planned gifts and what sort of case for support narrative and communication that we required, which was a wonderful conversation about that particular organization. At the end of that conversation, the CEO said, "This has been really enlightening, and I think I need to update my will. And I think I will, and I'll put my university that I attended in my will, because I'm very close to that university." But they didn't mention the organization or the charity that they're currently CEO of. Why is that? Why did that happen? Well, the university that the individual went to has made this kind of giving a social norm, has made it part of the fabric of how people support that university, has honored individuals who've given gifts, have promoted this, so that even though the individual is working for another charity, also very prominent, which has not taken the time to make it a social norm, when they thought about this kind of giving, they turned to that organization that had made it a social norm. We need to do that. We need to take the time to do that to the best of our ability with the resources that we've got. So let's take a time at this point to do some level setting. And again, we need to know who we are as a charity. That particular understanding is fundamental to taking all of the other steps. Who are we as a charity? What are we doing as an organization that has a mission in the world? And what are our unique characteristics? And what are our unique approaches? So when we take the time to level set, what we're doing is actually taking the time and to determine those characteristics of our charity. Also, that will help us to take the time to understand our program, our unique program. And so when we take that time, it is a time to get real. It's a time to take a moment to truly discover who we are. And again, it seems existential. It's not really. It's about understanding our opportunity, understanding who we are as an organization and what steps we ought to take, so that when we're building the program, we are establishing what we believe, again, to be a truly proactive program. We want to move towards that. We have these passive programs. This is essentially organizations that can receive gifts with little or no promotion. We have the active programs where there's a little bit of promotion. There's not really the establishment of engagement with donors. And we see this with the largest organizations in the country that we work with, where there's lots of marketing of this kind of giving, but very little engagement with donors, very little interaction. It's typically arm's length without individuals actually being connected with a live person on the far end of the charity to talk to them. When we think about a proactive program, we want a dedicated, established program plan with budget that forecasts gifts. We want it to be integrated and purposeful when we promote the program and gift vehicles. And we want to have donor interaction, regular, consistent donor interaction that moves donors along to from identification all the way to creating the gift, not realizing, but stewarding the gift. Of course, realization comes afterwards. So we want to move into this direction. So how do we take that time, though, to level set? How do we take the time to understand who we truly are? So first, let's take a look at those factors that we need to consider about your organization. What's the age and the history of the organization? Have you been around for hundreds of years or over 100 years? Some charities in Canada have indeed been around for that long. Are you relatively new as an organization overall? And what's your history in terms of how you have been funded in the past? How are you going forward with funding? There are lots of charities in our country that are actually, agencies that receive a lot of funding from government, very little fundraising. So age, history of the organization, and where you are there. So let's take a moment to understand that. The next part of this, of course, is what is your geographic impact area? Now, most charities can make the claim that we support everyone. Other organizations are a little more realistic or practical about that. So are you currently a local organization? Are you regional, provincial, national, international? Now, this affects us from both sides. One is, who's our constituent base? How widely can we go with our constituent base? Of course, people will go outside of the areas that we support and perhaps fund us. But typically, if you're local, we know where your stakeholders are. If you're international, they can be everywhere. So this will help to determine how we go about approaching, how we structure our activities. And so understand that. I think at a moment here, I should have said before we began, these are your determinants. These are your characteristics. These are things to not lament, or to be excited about. They're simply who you are, and they're allowing you to have a rational understanding and approach to the program that we're going to be engaging. So again, that geographic location. What's the size of your database and your donor base? So what's the difference between the two? Many of you know, but I'll go through this. Your database is every single person that you capture onto your CRM. And these people can be, of course, someone who's given you a gift before, but they can also be volunteers. We tend to capture them in CRM. They can be users. I've worked with organizations that use the overall CRM to bring in users or clients, depending on how you're phrasing them. So that's your entire database, but your donor base is very different. Your donor base, your database does include donors, but also lapsed and former donors. Your donor base are who right now is supporting the organization. Typically, the way we view the donor base is those people who have made a gift in the last either full fiscal or full calendar year. So what number is that? So if we were to take stock right now of an organization's donor base, we would be looking at two things. Either they've given a gift since April 1st of 2022 up until today, because there's one full fiscal year in there, and a lot of charities have that as a fiscal year, or January 1st of 2022 up until today. Again, one full calendar year, because we don't have a full fiscal or calendar year that we're in right now. So if they've made a donation in that particular time frame, they're a donor. If they haven't, even though they may have been loyal in the past, maybe they've, you know, we gave for many years in a row, but they've lapsed and we haven't seen them for 3 or 4 years, they're on your database. We need to know the difference, and it will help to establish our a better understand what our marketplace is and the size of our marketplace. Because ultimately, and I know next week when Ken is presenting, he'll talk a little bit about delving deep into your data. But if we're doing this sort of an initial assessment, that donor base is really very important to us. Do you have hundreds of thousands of donors in that base, tens of thousands, thousands? That will help us to understand what kind of programming we need. Who are your stakeholders? That's a very important point too. Are they typically users? Are they driven by mission? Are they transactional in their approach? What are they trying to achieve? Understanding who our stakeholders are and how we're helping our stakeholders is extraordinarily important, because it will help for us to understand how we need to engage our stakeholders. So make a determination, even write out, these different stakeholders. I was speaking to a school the other day, and in that school, you know, there are, of course, students, there are staff, there are faculty, there are volunteers, but there are also current parents of students. There are former parents of students. There are alumni that are younger. There are alumni that are older. These are their stakeholders. Let's figure out your stakeholders. Who are they? Are they patients and staff and medical staff and donors and volunteers? Are they users of another kind? Determine that. Understand that. That will help you to understand your program. The size of the fundraising staff is extraordinarily important. We see very, very large organizations with tiny fundraising staffs. Why is that? Because they're an agency, or they could be some other organization delivering programming of a certain kind with a very small fundraising staff. This will help to determine so that we understand what our ability to deliver and the capacity to deliver a program is. We need to make that determination. And a lot of times we'll take it to the next step and ask ourselves, how many people are dedicated to actually talking about planned giving? So it could be just you, it could be half of your time, but are there others? Are your major gift officers speaking about planned giving? How much of their time is supposed to be dedicated to it? Take all that together, add up all of these percentages, and look for your full FTE or beyond on the fundraising side alone and on the staff side in terms of fundraising in general. Of course, there's also the importance of fundraising to overall revenue. Is there a history of that or not? I was speaking earlier this week with an organization that is moving slowly, incrementally to raising more money. It's not, even though they're a charity, they're primarily a not-for-profit and an agency. They have primarily been funded through government grants and per diems, but also fee-for-service directly to clients. They see now the opportunity to raise money and the perhaps need to raise money. But right now the revenue percentage is not quite high. It's not high, and it's so low, in fact, that it's almost a second thought. We have to understand that as we go into that, because the importance of fundraising is determined by that. But and do we and it's also how we're approaching it. Do we have a history of giving? Of course, the other part of this is, what area of focus is your impact? Is it education or healthcare, hospitals? We know what these mean, but the fact is that your area will help to determine what your immediate opportunity is and how much of an activity you'll need to engage in to elevate this sort of program into the mindset to make it a social norm. With education, I told that small anecdote earlier about how that educational institution at university had been at this for a while. And oftentimes we in the planned giving world feel that the universities or the educational institutions have a leg up on all of these things. They may indeed. So, but healthcare, hospital, things like that, you need to know that. It changes your approach. But there's more to even consider. So, how are you acquiring donors? How do you talk to donors on an ongoing basis? Are you marketing driven primarily? Is that your acquisition method? Are you fed focused primarily? That's changed through COVID, but that still could be, something to consider. How can we either, are we able to change what we're doing? Can we institute other ways of moving forward? What's our philanthropic tradition? Again, has it been mostly arm's length? Are we talking to donors only if they reach out and instigate? Are we following the path of these activities? In terms of identification, cultivation, solicitations, that's a muscle that we have that's well exercised or not. What's your structure as an organization? We see this primarily in national organizations, but there are also local organizations that are decentralized in terms of their fundraising. So are you a centralized organization? Are you raising money at the center and to support the programs across the country? Are you decentralized? Are many people raising money in the name of your organization in various geographic locations? And that's, can be, is that a federated reality, or is that, a circumstance where your organization is centrally controlled, one charitable number, but multiple regions or provincial activity, and all of those have their own fundraising going on. So are we federated? Are we affiliated? What's our structure? And so that's the other part of this. And then we need an identified specific opportunity. Next week, Ken will talk more about what is our opportunity, but not everyone's opportunity is the same, but we need to know that. So we'll take the time to do that. And there may be others that pop up as you do this self-assessment. There may be other things that you need to talk about at that point. So let's talk about, again, building, learning a bit more about your organization. You get a better understanding of how to build this program. So, and then you can find that right balance of activities. That balance between budget, predictability, your organization's opportunity, things like that. So again, when we're thinking about that balance, we're thinking always about having a proactive program, focusing on how do we create that program here at our organization. So just to recap again about that gear of fundraising, we're looking at all of these areas: leadership, commitment, budget, how our gift administration is working, donor recognition, stewardship, our policies, marketing activities with metrics and reporting, and our staffing. We are building this program for our activity in relation to who we are as an organization. And that's really important. So as a recap, though, we move into the next part, which is a checklist of taking this on. So doing this, take this away, fill this out, and take a moment to consider all of these areas as we go forward. So institutional commitment, you can fill this out as you go along, and where you have check marks, great. If you don't have check marks, there's an opportunity for you to work on it as you go forward. So when we're building this, this will help, going through that process will help you consider what your goals are for your program. It will also help you to correctly find the correct activity related to the size of the opportunity and your goals, and allow you to understand how quickly you can grow towards that proactive program. A former partner of mine used to say, a lot of organizations feel that they need to take the first step. Some organizations actually have to take, they're actually at step minus three. They have to take three steps to get to the point where they can take the first step to going to that proactive program. So it will help you establish who you are and the nature of your program by going through that self-assessment. What are your goals and how are you going about achieving them? And then it's those objectives, yearly objectives, and the tactics come out of this self-assessment. And all of that will help you and your program to help you and determine what program you need. What's your program? And so that you can build your pipeline. And we'll talk about your pipeline in a moment. But that pipeline, whatever term you want to use, is key to ongoing and success. And we'll show you how that works in a second. But this self-assessment will lead you to that. And it'll help with target markets, marketing channels, potential tactics, and other things, other activities. So what we've done is created a little bit of a case study here. And we're not going to walk through the case study, but when we do this self-assessment, what we get is, here are some characteristics of an organization, where they're starting. It's an arts organization. It's been around for about 60 years, has a local presence, but has national prominence as well. You regularly engage with donors to cultivate and ask. You have a large database with significant number of current donors, which is wonderful. This organization has been working in PG at an active program level. Currently receive a few gifts per year and have some expectancies. Have leadership support, it's goal-oriented on the PG side, and for the next 3 years, they understand a campaign is coming, and they have a halftime person. So that's dedicated to this with a small budget. So this self-assessment allows you to kind of come to your case study, your understanding of what those opportunities are going through that program. So this will allow you to understand what your program needs to look like to take advantage of the activity, but also to balance that with the resources that have been allocated to you. And it will also allow you to now determine what are your best practices, not someone else's best practices, but your best practices. What do we need to put into place to be successful and to bring about, to the best of our ability, given all of these factors, transformational giving in this well-established and integrated program of fundraising, planned giving.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the PG Growth Plan Giving Podcast. For more episodes of our podcast, please go to pggrowth.com, or you can find us on your favorite app related to podcasts, or look for us on iTunes, on Spotify, and on Google Play. Until next time, thanks for joining me. I'm Ed Sluga.